You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Hello, listeners. This is Randy, and you're listening to Doggy Radio Book Club. I am very sorry for that delayed start. My guest is still on the bus, so I thought, well, you know, I'll just wait for her to arrive. But they've added multiple more stops on the 99, which if you've been to campus recently, you'll notice. So I'm just going to go ahead and get started. So you'll just have to put up with my voice for a little bit. So as I said, this is Doggy Radio Book Club. Doggy Radio Book Club is a bi-weekly book club coming to you through the airwaves of CITR 101.9 FM. This is my last live show at CITR in Vancouver. On Sunday, I will be moving back. After 5 years of living here, getting my degree, I am moving back to Alberta. But that doesn't mean this show is going to disappear. It just means that episodes are going to be recorded in Alberta instead, which will be fun. Today, we are talking about a book that was suggested by my guest, Malika. We're going to be talking about Alone with You in the Ether by Olivia Blake. It's an interesting book. I don't want to get into it too much until my guest does arrive, if the bus ever gets here. But I'm excited. I'm excited to have this conversation, and I'm excited for this last live episode. I'm going to miss doing live radio so much. It's been such an important part of my life at UBC, and my degree and meeting people and being a part of CITR has been so great. Yeah, and speaking of dog-eared, I'm very excited about season 6. I talked about it in our last episode, which was the first episode of the season. So it is Summer of Love. That's the name of the season. And yeah, my goal is really to focus on romance because I basically exclusively read romance when the summer rolls around because I don't know what gives summer more than a romance novel. I'm currently back in my historical romance phase, which has become kind of like clockwork. It rolls around whenever the sun starts shining more often. So I'm very excited about that. But yeah, so in this season, if you're a listener and you have like a favorite book, maybe you'd want to come on the show. Since shows are pre-recorded, it means that you can live anywhere. So if there's anyone listening to this who doesn't live in Vancouver and you want to come on the show, you can always contact me on email at dogearedbookclubradio@gmail.com, or you can find me on Instagram at dogearedradiobookclub. But also send me suggestions. And if you happen to read the book, please always send me reviews. I love to hear what people think about books. You don't always have to, you know, voice your opinion. You can write it down too, which I know can be challenging. My book journal is a testament to that. Sometimes I'll go to write a review, in my book journal and it turns into just rambling because I think I have fully formed thoughts, but it turns out that I just have these little tidbits that blow through my brain whenever I'm reading, which makes this show interesting because sometimes I have to really force myself to like think while I'm reading. It's quite easy, especially when I'm reading something more lighthearted like a romance novel. I can tend to just absorb the information as it's coming but not really spend a lot of time sitting with it. But I appreciate the challenge, and I think in the past seasons, there have been some books that have challenged me more than others. So it's very exciting to have that challenge and to have people in my life that read books outside of what my comfort zone is for reading is cool because there's a lot of books that I've read for this show that I wouldn't necessarily have picked up if I just went to the bookstore. I think a perfect example of that is a book that we talked about on the show last season, which is Greenwood. Greenwood is not a book I would have just walked into the bookstore and picked up. In fact, when I went to buy it, I had to get help to find it because it was in a section of the bookstore I don't go to very often. And it turned out to be one of my top reads of the year, which was something I didn't expect. So it's always nice to, you know, expect the unexpected, I guess, sometimes. Yeah, trying to think of other things to talk about without getting into the book too much before my guest gets here. But maybe I'll talk about our next book. So I am very excited for the next episode, which will be on June 6th. I'm going to have Nicole join me. So Nicole has a Bookstagram under the tag Nicole, I think at Nicole.booknerd. Yeah, and I just had a meeting with Nicole today, and I mentioned that I had entered my historical romance phase, and they very graciously offered to read a historical romance novel. So I'm very, very excited about that. And I think that that will be very fun. So the book that we're going to be reading for June 6th is going to be 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean. I've never read this book before, so this will be a first read for me. But I think it's going to fit in very well with historical romance and dukedom books I've been reading, lots of dukes. Speaking of which, I was listening to a podcast today where they were talking about this defense that a lot of people, or I guess critique that a lot of people give for historical romance novels, that they don't have historical accuracy. And one of the comments that I think they made based on what someone else had tweeted, but they were, the comment that they made is that often we think of, you know, people like BIPOC folks being in historical romances as like a duke or in some high-powered role, such as owning land. The critique is always like, oh, that's historically inaccurate. And one of the things that they say is like the historical accuracy of everyone being a duke is also not that true. So just the sheer amount of dukes that exist in a lot of like universes for historical romances would also not be historically inaccurate. So I think that's really interesting. And I try to take that into account when I read books for this show. Because I think that's a big impact of, you know, if you view something as being historically inaccurate or if you view something and how you critique it is important, because you can critique something based on your own opinions, which I think is, you know, that's what we do on a book show. But I think, you know, lending yourself to that understanding that, like, first of all, it's a book and it's fictional. And then second, yeah, like there are a lot of things that would not be accurate. And I think that's true, I don't know, for a lot of spicier historical romances. Like those are very, very untrue. Okay, well, thank you for listening to me rambling. I see my guest running to the door. So we're going to take a ad break. And when we get back, we're actually going to get into the book for today's episode. So please don't go anywhere.
Are you tired of Big Brother bookstores trying to sell you some billionaire's favorite book or Heather's top picks? Then you should check out Vancouver Books. Vancouver Books is a new online family-run bookstore. A portion of their profits go to First Nations reconciliation and environmental projects in British Columbia. They provide their customers with the most interesting books in fine arts, signed first editions, First Nations photography, fine ancient books, occult, and so much more. They also provide carbon-free delivery to anywhere in the Vancouver area. So go to www.vancouverbooks.ca to check out Vancouver Books today. That's www.vancouverbooks.ca.
Tune into Post Rock Friday from 10 to 11 with your host John P. for the best in post rock, drone, ambient, experimental, and noise.
Baby Girl are breathing effervescent life into a new definition of pop music. The Toronto duo, comprised of college friends Kiki Francis and Cameron Bright, place a refreshing spin on youth nostalgia with a contemporary edge. Their mission statement says it all. Be Still My Heart is a heartfelt collection of songs detailing the bitter and the sweet of love as it navigates feelings of joy and hopelessness. Baby Girl is coming to Vancouver, performing at the Biltmore Cabaret on May 25th. For tickets, go to admitone.com.
Hello, CITR listeners from Barb Snellgrove
and DJ Denise Fraser of Queer FM Van on CITR Radio. Happy birthday, CITR Radio and Discorder Magazine, for 85 years of providing unique and independent programming to the masses.
CITR understands the power of sharing stories and their responsibility to platform all communities, occupying the unceded traditional and shared territories of the Musqueam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh nations. Communities like the LGBTQIA+ community, which is why Queer FM Vam, heard weekly on Tuesdays and Fridays at 8 a.m. PST, has proudly been broadcasting on CITR Radio for over 30-plus years, making our show one of Canada's longest-running queer radio programs in Canada.
For those who already tune in to CITR, thank you for supporting us. And for the uninitiated, check out CITR.ca to peruse all of the incredible programming choices available to listen to. There is truly something for everyone.
Happy 85th anniversary to CITR Radio 101.9 FM.
Hello, and welcome back to Doggy Radio Book Club. I'm Randy, and I finally have a guest. Yay! So I am joined today by Malika. How are you today?
I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm good. I'm good. Definitely, I feel like this is like a good reminder of like, because I always, people are like, oh, like, you know, are you excited for grad? Are you excited for this? Like, yes, I am. But like for the actual day, no, because I know something will go wrong. Like, I hate putting all of my eggs in one basket. I hate putting all of that pressure on like one day or one thing to be so amazing, because that's just not how life works. And that's... And today, I feel like this episode is a perfect reminder. I was like, oh, it's my last live episode. Like, it's going to be so much fun.
And then the bus decided to be transit.
Yeah. But that's okay. Hopefully there are still people listening that weren't, you know, scared away by my ramblings. I've never had to talk that long by myself. I was like, I don't know what to say. I feel like it's also easier to, like, I can talk for a long time, but, like, when someone's looking at me, because then it's, like, telling jokes.
It's like more personable.
Yeah. Like, comedians need an audience, right?
Yeah.
Like, I need someone that makes eye contact with me to be like, no, you're not crazy, Randy. Like, that makes sense.
I feel that to my core.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. We got to get right into the book.
Yes.
Okay. So we are talking about Alone With You in the Ether by Olivia Blake. I was so confused because that's a pen name, because
yes.
When I Googled the book, then it was like, oh, it's written by so-and-so, and I was like, oh, no, like, I've totally misremembered, and then I was like, wait, no, it's the same.
Yeah, for her YA, I think she goes by Alexine Farrell Falmouth or something, and I forgot the name, actually, and then by this, she goes Olivia Blake, yeah.
Yeah, which is interesting. Okay, so first things first, we're going to do the read the back of the book description, yada, yada, and see if it's accurate.
Yes.
Okay. So, Chicago, sometime. Two people meet in the armory of the Art Institute by chance. Prior to their encounter, he is a doctoral student who manages his destructive thoughts with compulsive calculations about time travel. She is a bipolar counterfeit artist undergoing court-ordered psychotherapy. By the end of the story, these things will still be true. But this is not a story about endings. For Reagan, life is a finish line of mutually assured disappointment. Her method of coping with the dreariness of existence is to project herself into imagined multi-potency? Never heard that word. Spinning new threads of desire with every impulse decision she makes. For Aldo, life is a plague of constancy. constancy, a structure of rules and formulas that keep him going, without which the entire frame of his existence would collapse. For both of them, life is a matter of resigning themselves to the blueprints of inevitability until 6 conversations with a stranger from the variable that glitches the entire simulation. That was a lot of words.
Yeah, I think that's one from the first. She did, so Olivia Blake did 2 versions. There's the self-pubbed version and then the actually, like, I don't know, traditionally published version.
Oh.
So that one I did read. So that's the original one I read. And then I read this one, which is the...
Okay, because this is the one I took off her, like, her website.
Yes.
So...
And it's a very different description I was reading to the traditionally published one, which is interesting.
Okay, give me the traditional published one.
Here.
Okay. Ready, listeners, yeah. For a second time around. In the Chicago Art Gallery, 2 people meet by chance. Okay, I'm glad they said gallery because, like, I was like, I don't know what that is. He is a doctoral student consumed by calculations on time travel, which he uses as a distraction from destructive thoughts. She is a bipolar counterfeit artist undergoing court-ordered psychotherapy. By the end of the story, these things will still be true, but this is not a story about endings. For Reagan, people are predictably tedious, including and perhaps especially herself. She copes with the dreariness of existence by living impulsively, sometimes imagining a new alternative timeline springing from each rash decision. To Aldo, the world feels chaotic. So he's erected a wall of routines, a backbeat of rules. Without them, the framework of his existence would collapse. For Reagan and Aldo, life has involved resigning themselves to society's expectations. But could 6 conversations with a stranger be the variable that disrupts the entire simulation? Okay, yeah.
Very different, though, right?
I could see, yeah, that's like a lot more... sugar-coated.
Yes.
I think. I think this one, the first one is more accurate because this novel's wild.
I think it's more accurate, too. That's actually what made me want to pick up the novel. Like, I think it was in 2021, so 2 years ago, like, I read it. So, like, yeah. The self-pubbed, yeah.
Yeah. This book is, that's my reaction. Reaction to the book. This book is a lot. That's what I wrote here for my point. Okay, so this was your pick.
Yes.
I asked you to come on the show, and I said, what book do you want to read? And you were like, this book. And I was like, never heard of it. Okay. So why?
Well, I don't know. It was just like, I'm a romance reader. You know I am.
I know that.
Like, my other choice for this was kind of typical. It was Book Lovers by Emily Henry.
You know, you missed the opportunity because I haven't read Emily Henry yet.
Really?
And I'm like, what better reason to read her book than for the show?
Oh, my gosh. I just thought it would be typical. I thought you probably had, like, 3 other authors or people who have come to talk about her work, to be honest. That's why I was like, oh, let's go with someone.
Are you saying you don't listen to every episode of my show?
Oopsie. Not every. But no, so I just kind of was like, oh, let's go with someone that I really enjoyed. Like, I read this at a different stage in my life. Like, honestly, reading it at 19, 20 versus like 21, 20, I'm turning 22, like, it was wild both times, but very different. But like, what was your reaction? I was like, we haven't talked about this at all. Like, with the other one we talked about it a little, but like,
yeah. Well, it was really because we saw each other last night. We went to RF Kuang?
Yes.
The book event. She was in Vancouver and she gave a talk that we went to.
So exciting.
So cool. We got assigned books. So I finally own a copy of Babel. So maybe there'll be an episode coming soon. Who knows? But as far as this book goes, it was a lot. I'm very much in my, like, chill out romance vibe book, so like this book kind of like hit me because I was this is a lot of paragraphs, like this is this is taking way more concentration than like the other books I'm reading, which isn't inherently a bad thing. It just means that I need to devote more energy to read, because normally I'm like, oh, I can like read a romance novel in 3 hours.
Yeah.
But like, not a book like this,
sorry. It is a romance, but like, there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there's like a lot of other elements that get you. I think it took me a while to get into it. That's like the first thing I will say. For that like first section, I was like, I hate all of these characters.
Yes.
Yeah, you feel it. You feel it to your core. It was real. Especially Reagan. I was like, I don't care about a single thing. It gave me like the same, I guess, like vibe of the cool girl monologue
from but Con Girl.
Yeah. Like not. Sort of. Like. Anyways, I don't know. Like the idea of like you're like, you know, conventionally beautiful, like you're wealthy and like, but like you pop. Well, at first I thought she was doing drugs. So that's the other thing I didn't realize, because I had read the book. I had read the back of the book that said that she was bipolar, but then I had forgot about that by the time I went to read it. So then I forgot that she, like, had mental health issues. Mm-hmm. So then I just thought she was doing drugs. Anyway, but she kind of did, I think. With Mark, because,
he was not.
Yeah.
Not good. He's not it.
I think, like, the middle, I'm trying to think of this section, what the name of it would have been. That was my favorite part.
My favorite was the six conversations, if that's the part you're talking about.
Maybe that's it. Yeah, the conversations. It must have been the conversations. Yeah. That, like, I started to get into it more. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the next section, I was, like, in it. Like, okay, I see what's happening.
Yeah.
I, like, sat at my kitchen table reading it on my phone. So I kind of... I need to jump to the end first. So to all of you listening, I'm sorry, but we need to talk about the ending first, because I have to make sure that we talk about it, because I don't think I understood it. Okay, so here's my question.
Yes.
Why did she forge the painting?
When I was reading it, it was more just like this need, because she is a counterfeit artist and she's like trying to fit in. So I think it's like, when I was reading it, like, I have a little mental illness and stuff in my family. So it's, like, a little, like, some, and it's a bipolar, too. So it's kind of, like, trying to understand people's actions of why is always the main thing when you're dealing with someone with mental illness, I find. And why she counterfeited it was, like, a question that, like, stayed true with me. It's, like, why did she feel the need to? Like, there was, like, you know, no one can tell it's different, no one anything. But I just kind of felt it was, like, something she just needed to do to move past, like, that aspect, you know, to move, like, because she has, like, if you have read the book, people listening, but, like, they talk about, Reagan talks about herself in, like, these different categories. Like, you know, there's Reagan, who's herself, little Reagan, who was her, what people called her in reference to her older sister, Madeline.
Yeah.
And there was Charlotte, who her parents had created to be this like perfect thing that she broke by doing the count. So she was in a counterfeit scam with them, making fake money and exchanging it for, like, she would make fake foreign currency and like get American dollars by going to the like currency exchange. I don't know what it's called, but like foreign currency exchange. So I think it was just kind of leaving like that Charlotte aspect behind that she tried to build up so well. That's kind of what I read it as. But, like,
No, I can see that. I can see that. It was kind of, like, the last thing.
Hurrah, sort of. Because
she basically just put it back in her parents' house, right? Like, she forged it, and then she just put it back in.
Yeah.
Like, she didn't sell it.
No.
But there was the part where she, like, talked about the timeline where she would sell it, which is, we'll get into the timeline thing later. Okay, and so then my next question was, like, why did they break up? But it's because he knew that she forged a painting.
Yeah.
And that, like, triggered him to be like, okay, like, we're both broken. We can't be broken together. We need to break up.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. And then my last question is literally, why did they get back together? But that's not really my question. I think it's more like, how did it happen? Because I think I kind of understood it, but also at that point, I was probably reading a little bit too fast. So, do you want to just spoil the entire ending?
Well, if I remember the entire ending, but for me, when I first read it, so, like, why I chose it, like, okay, so it's been 2 years since I read it, and I just was rereading it literally like, the same as you, like, this weekend, like, oh, gotta go. And what I really liked about it is it shows, like, not, like, it's not the second chance trope as, like, you know, like, you know how in books when there's the second chance trope, it's like they've gone away for some time and it's met back. And it's like, oh, our mental health issues were suddenly fixed. Like, we're unbroken people. I like this story because it's like they'll never, it's not, they weren't broken to begin with. They just have these issues. So that's what I kind of liked about it. They realized, you know what, like Ronaldo or Aldo has his issues and Reagan has hers. And at the time when he did find out about the counterfeit, he was like, you know what, I don't think we can do this. We are both broken. But then when they come back together, it's like, yeah, we're both broken, but we can make it work. There's this quote in there where it's like, you are a bunch of pieces, like, of your past, like, people you've met, and, like, you're not always fully whole. And I just kind of think that, like, ending kind of brought it together. Like, they will never be whole as, like, entities, but, like, why not just, like, they love each other, and that should be enough sort of thing. Because also, like, what my thought process also when I was reading this as like a 20-year-old, it was like, oh my god, this is like the most romantic thing ever. Like, you know, like, oh my gosh, because like I didn't really like second chance romances ever, like, to be honest. I was just like, okay, but like I like the neatly wrapped bow of happily ever after, and this was the first book that completely like shattered that, because it's like, yes, it is happily ever after, I'm like using air quotes, but like, it's really not. Like, it's very messy. And, like, that was, like, my first exposure to, I think, like, just messiness in relationships and stuff. Because, like, I don't know. I just don't have much experience with, like, reading. Like, I just thought it was, like, not groundbreaking, but it was just so different. And that's what I really enjoyed about it. And then this time around, it was more like, okay, there's parts of these that are a little bit cringe that I don't know how, like, I really, like, was like, wow, like, this is, like, peak writing. But, like, I still love it. Like, I'm not trying to say it's not good writing or anything. Like, there's just some sentence structures and, like, just some ways it was worded where you're like, oh, that's a little bit interesting. Like, I wouldn't choose that.
Yeah.
But I don't know. I really liked it because it just, I felt like it was, like, a not a remixed version of the trope, but, like, kind of just, like, a play on, like, the second chance.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I can see that. I mean, I love second chance romances. They're my favorite thing. But that only came as I've gotten older that I've liked them more. And when I was younger, I really, but now I'm like, I live for this. Like, I want adults that were, you know, understandably not smart when they were kids, and they come back as adults and rekindle what they had.
Yeah, and I think that's also what's also another weird thing about me. I'm just remembering as we're talking about it, I actually loved that trope as a kid. One of my favorite movies, London, Paris, New York, was actually about that. Like, the movie starts with them at 30, like, completely separated. He's, like, directing his big-time movie. She's, like, living her own life as a teacher, almost about to be married. And then it's, like, three different time points where they've met, grown apart, rekindled and stuff. And then I guess in high school, I just was like, nah, I want that true love. Like, I don't care about this
happily
whole...
Happily ever after only.
Yes, I think that's actually because I was like, hey, wait a second, I did like it when I was a kid. Because I was like 9 when I watched that movie. So I think 9-year-old me had more realistic introspection than 16-year-old me.
Hey, that's fair. That's fair. Yeah, okay, well, that makes sense. Yeah, and... Like, they rekindle it when he finds her exhibit, right? Yes. He goes to her exhibit and sees the painting alone with you in the ether. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it was all the hexagons. Like, okay, I really like the bees and the hexagons, too. I don't know why. That really stuck with me.
This book gets... I think, okay, when I'm like, oh, it's a lot, it's because this is, like, this book is more philosophical than any romance book you'll read.
Yes.
Normally. Like, this, to me, this is, like, a mix of, like, literary fiction and romance.
I guess, yeah.
I think it is, because a lot of it is about, like, characters, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you could have this... If this book was written without the romance, it would be, like, a fiction, whatever. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know. I call everything literary fiction. I know it's not. Don't come for me. I don't care.
Honestly, I see that now.
But do you know what I mean? Because it's, like, it's dealing with themes of, like, mental illness and, like... compulsive thoughts. Like, and, like, the way it's written is very, like... you know, kind of intense for, like, a romance, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're seeing, like, the concept of, like, multiple timelines and, like, the multiverse. Like, you know, to me, that's getting into, like, a lot of different areas.
And that's why when I even texted you about what we were reading, I was like, it is by a sci-fi fantasy author, but I didn't realize my mental state hasn't been the best the past month, but I feel like I should have warned that it's kind of like a sci-fi, it reads kind of like a sci-fi fantasy, even though it's completely contemporary.
Yeah, that's what I mean, yeah. So it's, like, because most And this is just a lot of like stylistic choices. Like she doesn't always use quotation marks. Mm-hmm. And that is, I will forever dislike that as just a personal thing. Like yeah. I respect it as a style. I respect that it's not necessary. But as a reader, I am very lazy and I don't want to have to think, is this person saying that? Did they say it in the past? Is this a text message? Is it an email? Like, I don't know. Tell me.
And that's exactly what I think the difference between reading it 2 years ago and now is. Like, 2 years ago, I was eating that up. I was like, oh, this is, like, genius.
This is so artistic.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And now I'm like, oh, dang, I just want to get to the point. Like, still really love the book. It's still, like I think it's in the top of my romances just because, I don't know, like, at the end of the day, even with all the problems I've started to have with it, like, reading it again, I still think it's just so true to the human experience at my age. Like, I'm not very, like, old or, you know, but, like, because, like, the characters, like, you know, they're a little bit older, but they're still kind of immature in their ways. Like, Aldo still gets calls.
She's super immature.
Yes, but that too. Like, Reagan in general is just very immature and, like, kind of a spoiled rich, yeah. like, princess sort of thing. And then Aldo is someone who still gets, like, daily calls from, like, their dad and, like, you know. And checkups basically because he yeah. has some he has about a mental illness and stuff with he's like depressive, I'm pretty sure is mm-hmm. what he has, right? Depression.
Perhaps yeah. yeah.
They don't really go into Aldo doesn't have like a diagnosis for yeah. what anything he
had
has.
A drug problem.
Yes.
And he did overdose. So I think that's part of like his dad concerns is rooted mm-hmm. in that because he was yeah. at the hospital with them. Okay, so let's very quickly, we've already kind of mentioned main characters, but let's give some, like, you know.
Context, we're just talking about them.
Tidbits about them. Okay, so Reagan, these are my notes. I was so annoyed with her in the beginning. She
so
has
I.
major mean girl, cool girl vibes, and I do not like that. And then throughout the book, she stressed me out so much. I truly, because I didn't know what she was going to do or even what she was doing at points. And this is the whole thing about, like, the use of, like, quotation marks and paragraphs. I don't know. Everything that I learned in English class was thrown out the window with this book.
Yes.
Which, you know, I knew that could happen because I read The Road, which I also hated more than this book. I didn't hate this book. Okay. I just want to context that. I hate The Road, though. but yeah, so I understand that, like, artistic license, whatever. But the multiple timeline thing, so basically Reagan will, like, imagine doing something and then imagine multiple timelines of, like, how it would be different depending on, like, how it'll play out. Which is cool, but also kind of annoying to read.
Yes.
And I think, again, to me, that's like a formatting thing. Like, I think those things could have been formatted easier for the reader.
Yeah. I just have something to say about that. Because one thing that I, like, really liked about the format, and I still kind of think true, like, yes, obviously it's very messy to read in your head, but as you, like, go on, like, it kind of starts off with, like, sort of, like, this narrator kind of telling both their sides of the story, mm-hmm. like, this narrator version of them. And as, like, you go more into the novel and deeper into the story and into these characters' brains, the narrator, like, kind of just falls away and you're actually seeing, like, their thoughts. And Reagan, it's not really intrusive thoughts because it's, like, that's a whole different ballgame. But yeah. I'm trying to find the word for it. But it's, like, her thought process, in a yeah. sense. You're seeing it right firsthand. And, like, while I understand why it's unlikable, I actually did like it because it's, like, you're seeing the mind of someone that you on the outside would just think is, like we thought in the beginning. She was just kind of a pretentious, like, you yeah. know, like, you know, just
yeah.
a pretentious, like, weirdo that, like, literally, like, honestly, I didn't even realize she was Asian until halfway through the book. But at the beginning, I was like, oh, I'm reading another, like, when I read this a few years ago, I was like, oh, I'm reading another book about a spoiled white rich girl. But, like, you know, like, and then when she was Asian, I was like, oh, okay, but still kind of following that spoiled rich girl, like, yeah. thing, you know. And then it was like, oh, no, there's definitely more depth to her story. Like, because mm-hmm. I didn't know she was bipolar going in. But again, all the books I had read about mental illness before, especially in the romance, it's like, oh, I fell in love with a boy and he cured me. Yay.
Yeah.
Like, sort of thing. So that's why I thought it was interesting, like, with the format. It's like you're going deeper into, like, mm-hmm. Aldo and Reagan, like, what they really think, not this, like, notion of them that the narrator's telling. Like, I don't know, like, I know it's kind of hard to explain, but that's kind of how I felt reading
yeah.
it.
Yeah, and I totally get it. And, like, Reagan did grow on me, like, yeah. both of the characters did, the book did, like, I was super into it in the middle. And yeah, and so I like that aspect, but just, again, personally, yeah. I do not like the no use of quotation marks. I love and adore quotation marks.
Same.
My brain just like, they love it, you know? It just makes sense. Anyways, so yeah, I think that's just like a personal thing.
And honestly, I completely understand that, because even the first time I read it, I was like bawling my eyes out. But then it's like with the multiple stories, I'm like, which one am I even crying at this point? Like the multiple timelines.
There were parts I had to go back and like reread because I was like, did she actually do that? Like when she's like talking about imagining taking the forgery and selling it and disappearing. I was like, is she doing this? And like, that's where the stress is, because I was like, because at first I wouldn't realize it was like a thought. And so I would think it's an action. And so I would start reacting like she's acting it out. And then I was stressed. And then I got to the end and she's like, but I went back. And I was like, what? Like, you had me on the edge of my seat. My heart was pounding. I was so scared. And then you're like, just kidding. That was the thought.
Yeah.
Like, not just kidding. Obviously, it's valid. But, I mean, that's why.
And, like, at points, didn't you feel like it was like, okay, this is kind of redundant. Why am I even reading this sort of thing? But then it's like, okay, I understand also, like, you know, she's starting to think about multiple universes and things because she meets Aldo. He studies time travel and, like, theoretical mathematics. So like, also that was another part that, like, when I first was reading it, I was like, do I really want to read something about math? I hate math. Randy knows I just, math is not my favorite thing in the world, but for some reason this book really got to me and I really like enjoyed aspects. Like Aldo is my favorite character. Like, oh, so okay, what's your next note, because I have something I want to talk about.
You go.
Okay. The church scene. What did you think about that when they were sitting in the church during, I think it was, it wasn't their last conversation. It might have been their fourth conversation. What did you think of it? Because that's like one of my favorite scenes.
One of your favorite scenes. I'm trying to remember it now. It was good. Yeah. I don't know. If I was sitting next to him, I wouldn't. I don't know. I don't know if I have any thoughts, to be honest.
That's valid.
I don't know if that, like, scene stuck with me.
Well, do you have a scene that, like, stuck with you? Because that one did really stuck with me, because maybe it's the religious girl in me talking, but I'm like, because, like, religion's just so not a romantic thing ever. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm not Christian, or they were Catholic in this, but I'm not Catholic or anything, but, like, I was like, oh, that, like, seems, like, really, like, nice to be in that space and something, because, like, Reagan, like, usually when you, I really resonated not with Reagan, but Aldo in that moment. Usually when you do tell people that you are, like, religious or something, there's always, like, that pushback, like, you know? Yeah. Like, people either think you're an extremist freak of religion or that you're not doing it all well. Like, there's no in-between where it's, like, you can believe in something and not, or, like, you know, you can believe in something but, like, not, like, be, like, you know, people just automatically think when you're, like, super into religion, you're, like, a wild extremist and stuff, especially Islam. Like, that's my religion.
Yeah.
People, like, you know, or, like, there's the complete opposite pushback where it's, like, you don't wear a hijab, you're not fully covered. Like, that's, like, super weird. So I just thought it was, like, interesting being, like, it's a very, like, we don't like talking about it, but it's a very vulnerable part, especially when you're, in a romantic situation where you're like, oh, by the way, I'm gonna go to, in Aldo's case it was church on Sunday, but it's like, oh, I have to go to the mosque. Like, you don't want to ever say that, really,
right?
So, like, I don't know, maybe that's why it resonated for me. And, like, having someone that, like, to be there next to him, like, obviously, like I don't know why it was obviously, like, in Masjids it's separated women and women, so this could never ever happen for me, but it was just really nice to, like, just imagine some, like, a romantic situation going on to something, like, so important, like, to a ritual habit. Because even Aldo, it wasn't really like, oh, like, he went because he truly believed, like, in God. It was more like of, because he was really into strict rituals, habits sort of thing. But it's like part of being, like part of religion is rituals. Like, I don't know, it was just so, like, that's why I love this book. It's just so, like, so much at the, so, like, you know?
Well, I mean, it's interesting because I think it mirrors its characters. The characters are chaotic and the book is chaotic. And you reading it is chaotic, you talking about it, because, like, the whole entire thing is just chaos.
Honestly, that's why I loved it so much. I'm chaos.
As far as scenes go, I have two that I really like that stuck with me. So the first one was the phone call that they had, the first phone call they had, where she calls him in the middle of the night to talk about circles.
Yeah.
And then he's like, that's not a circle. And then she's like, and then she starts just listing things. I thought that was funny. Yeah, I I feel like that, when you were talking earlier about like getting thoughts, I feel like that conversation made me like them more. Mm-hmm. I think it got more into like their thoughts and like how they feel, which I think at that point was kind of what I needed. To me, they still felt very unrealistic. Mm-hmm. I mean, they still feel. Anyways, they feel like a character, but they felt like, I think that conversation humanized them a little mm-hmm. bit. Because to me, that's like an experience of like a late night phone call with someone where you're just like talking because you're not talking to their face. You say, you know, more because it's just a voice.
Yeah.
So I like that scene. And then I also, one scene I thought was interesting, and in the context of the book, I like it, is when Reagan's talking about how she knew that she loved him after their first fight.
Mm-hmm.
And she reflects about how, like, basically everyone had left before, and like when she had fought with people or argued with people, they don't listen to her. And so she really reflects that, like, that's not what Aldo did. Aldo mm-hmm. listened to her and didn't just like diminish and be like, because she talks about how like Mark used to just be like, I'm tired, I don't want to do this now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas he would just like talk, and then at the end he's like, I love your brain.
Yeah.
And that's like how they kind of end the fight. Yeah, I think in the context of this book, I like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it was very telling about, like, Reagan's character, but also Aldo's character, which was cool. Yeah, those are, like, the two scenes, I think.
Yeah, when you're talking about the fight, that's actually, like, the part that put it through for me. Because, like, a lot of, like, people, like, don't realize, like or not for me, like, but just with neurodivergency and stuff, like, having someone say that they like your brain is like sometimes the biggest compliment, because at times you don't even like your own brain. And there is a scene where it's like, can you even love my brain when it's mm-hmm. malevolent, when it's, you know, broken, when it hates you, when it like hates itself, like yeah. sort of thing. And I don't know, it just really stood out because it's like sometimes like that's why the whole cool girl, mean girl thing worked with Reagan in the end, because yeah. it's like people only see her as the personas she yeah. puts on. Like that's one thing that they really liked emphasized in the beginning is like, oh, she has a persona for this, she has a persona for that, but at the end of the day it's still one brain,
mm-hmm.
one thing that, like, you know, that makes her her. Obviously, like, in reality it's kind of reductive at the same time, being like she's just her brain, but then at the same time no one's ever appreciated it for her. They're always making up excuses like for her actions. Like no one ever actually lets her just say what she wants to or do what she wants to. It's like her therapist is like, oh, it's because of this. Parents are mm-hmm. like, oh, it's because we spoiled you and did this. The sister mm-hmm. is like, oh, it's because, you know, I got all the attention and you didn't, you know, sort of thing. Where Aldo's like, I don't care about any of that, all of that. It's just, I like your brain and I like mm-hmm. the way it thinks. I like how we have conversations. I like how we fight. Like, you know, I don't care about all the outside stuff. So I just thought it was like peak romance to me. Like, yeah.
Yeah. That's fit. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. I also think, like, part of the reason why this book, like, hit very strange to me reading it is that I very, like, because the romance books I'm reading right now are, like, you know, formulaic and they're, like, happily ever afters, you kind of go into it expecting something. And I think I really try not to do that, but I do. I'm not going to mm-hmm. lie and say I'm perfect. So I think to a degree I did go into this book with expectations. And I think that's why, like, I wouldn't recommend this book to someone as, like, you know, a happily ever after romance. No. Because it's not even a book where, like, you're technically rooting for them the whole time. Because I was not. I'm not even going to lie to you. I was not rooting for these two people to be together. Especially in the beginning.
Oh,
I
no.
was like, Aldo, run away. Like, I don't know what's going on with Reagan, but just go away. Also, I stand by this. I would not like Aldo in real life.
Oh, no. No, not at all. His habits and stuff, oh my god. I like, okay, I understand conceptions of like rudeness and niceness are like very like rooted in like yeah. not good things, but like we have them, we're in society, we live, so like I like all of his like habits. I just feel like would like really grate on me, like not saying hello, getting straight to the point, being very direct. And I understand that there was neurodivergency yeah. with him, but like just a lot of the aspects, even like, I don't know. Like, you go. I'm okay. trying to formulate my thoughts.
For me, it was, like, the teacher thing. Because I, now having completed my degree, I have very strong opinions on professors and teachers. And, like, there are lots of people that teach that should not teach. And I'm glad that he realized in the end that he shouldn't be around people.
Yes.
And was like, I'm going to get a job where I don't have to talk to students. Like, good for you. Yeah. Because they all hate you.
Mm-hmm.
Because, like, the scene where she's, like, sitting in the classroom, like, that's sweet and all. But he was so mean. He's like, you guys are just, like, the vibe was like, you're stupid. How do you not get this? And it's like, because they're not you, dude.
Yeah.
Like,
it's like you're teaching a lower level class. You're not teaching a bunch of your peers or, yeah, like, people in your, like, field.
Yeah. Like, you're doing a PhD in theoretical mathematics. These are undergraduate students. Like, leave them alone. Anyways, but yeah. So I think in real life, Aldo and I would not be friends.
Oh, no. For sure not.
But I think that's why this book is still interesting to me. And I would be curious to reread it in, like, a year without this, like, expectation I went to it of, like, lovey-dovey romance, you know, happily ever after.
Yeah, that was on me. I definitely should have given you a warning. But, like, I was just like, I really liked it. And I thought it was super cute. And I love the romance in it. So I think Randy will like it. And then I'm like, ooh. And then I'm, like, rereading it this week. And I was like, ooh, I really should have warned. It's really deep. I was like, I forgot how deep it was. I also probably didn't realize how deep it was, like, being, and not that I was super, super young when I read it, but, like,
I don't know. I'm turning 24 in a month, and I...
19, I guess.
I was young at 19.
19, 20, yeah, I guess. And it was, like, you know, we were just going into a pandemic, and it was, like, you know, like...
Yeah.
Because that's when I read it. I read it on, actually, when I got my first dose of the vaccine.
Like, oh, wow.
Yeah, that's, like, the week I read it, and, like, I literally took the book with me, because it was, like, it was very small compared to the version I have. Like, this one's, like, big and blue. This one was, like, literally, like, this big.
Yeah,
and it was,
like a paperback. Yeah.
And... yeah, I took it with me to there. And, like, I don't know, it just, like, when the world was so uncertain, I think I liked having characters that were uncertain of themselves, too. Because
yeah.
I thought, like, you know how you think you're the only one in the world? Like, I'm like, oh, my God, there's, like, you're very selfish at, like, 19, 20. You're like, everything is about me. Like, my experiences are the only ones that matter. So it's, like, reading that, you're like, oh, wow, like, these characters definitely feel that way, too. But it's, like, they're also going through that uncertainty. So it's, like, not that I didn't have empathy for the world. I obviously did, but, like,
but you were also 19.
Yes. Like, just chop all my actions up to that. But it's like, okay, so it's like a lot of people do go through this mm-hmm. time in their lives where they're like, can you love someone with everything that's going on in mentally, right? Like, because that time in our lives was like, even if you didn't have mental health issues, which I did, but, like, even if you didn't, it would be, it's a lot, like, mm-hmm. So I don't know, I just thought it was, like, really, like, reading it 2 years apart, it's, like, very different experiences. Like, I don't know why I cringed a lot more this time where I didn't last time. So I don't know what that was about either. Like, I don't know why.
I scoffed a lot. I feel like Reagan would say something and be like, ugh.
And that's the thing. Back then, I was, like, I didn't have any of those, like, cringe or, like, anything moments. But then it's, like, I think that's also why it also was, like, enjoyable too, because it's like it felt so real, and it's still, even with the cringe, like, we're cringe in real life, like, let's be honest.
Okay, this is, like, we're running out of time, we only have a couple minutes left.
Okay.
But I kind of want to end on this note because I agree with you, and I think, like, for me, like, books will hit you at the moment you're in.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I read, not to brag, but I read Red, White, and Blue before it was popular. Okay.
Yes, you did.
I did. I stand by that, and that book is still to this day one of my favorites. Just because in that moment, it was, like, the first queer book I read.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it really launched me into, like, this, you know, idea of representation and, like, into queer literature and just, like, so much. And, like, it was also – I read it in the summer and it was just so, like, happy. And mm-hmm. I was, like – and dramatic and just – I don't know. And just, like, at that moment in my life, it just hit me. So I think there's really something to be said and, like, respecting your younger self, because I read it when I was substantially younger than I am now. And I respect that. I respect that Randy that read that book and was like, this is amazing. I have to post it on my Instagram so everyone can see it.
Oh, my God. I did that, too. I posted it with my vaccine card being like, you, like, got two things done today.
I know. And so I think that's, like, to me, I, like, respect that younger version. But anyways, we are running out of time. But I think we covered some.
I think we covered.
This is, like,
it's a heavy book, so obviously that's on me. I should have definitely, like, saw that there was a bus warning, that there's 5 extra stops to my bus. What the heck? That was so whatever. But Yes. Like, I could talk about this book for hours just because it's so much. And I think that's one thing that, like, probably I should have warned.
Couldn't use a measure warning. That's okay. If you were going to sell this book to someone to read in one sentence, what is that sentence?
Messy, complex characters, but at the end of the day, they win you over, is what I would say.
Okay, that's good. Because,
like, Aldo and Reagan, what's funny is you hated Reagan more. I wasn't a big fan of Aldo in the beginning, and then I was like, oh my god, he should be added to the list of, like, you know how, like, in Book Talk has, like, book boyfriends? I'm like, he needs to be added to that list.
Yeah, I will say, like, he would make a pretty decent, he cooks.
Yes, oh my god.
He cooks. So, you know, that's bonus point number one.
And he overtips at restaurants. Always a green flag.
Yeah, that was so good. He's like, my dad owns a restaurant, so of course. Yeah, no, I agree. Okay, well, that brings us to the end of the show. So thank you for coming on my last live show.
Thank you for having me.
This is so exciting. Make sure, listeners, you tune in on June 6th, I believe it is. Let me double check. Yes, it is June 6th. We are going to be reading and talk, well, I am going to be reading and talking about 9 Rules to Break When Romancing a Rake by Sarah McLean.
Ooh.
Very excited. So it's going to be good. All right. So, listeners, I will leave you to the rest of your Tuesday night.